Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hey guys, it's Terry Foy. Thanks for checking out part two of the Fall Recap Podcast. Last week when Christian, Matt, and I recorded this, I joked that we were fortunate because, unlike some other shows that are recorded ahead of time and then released later, we didn't have to worry about something late developing affecting the content of the show. As many of you probably know by now, on Tuesday before Thanksgiving, Johns Hopkins announced that sophomore midfielder Joel Tinney would be missing the 2016 season due to a violation of NCAA rules. He remains in good academic standing at the university and is, by all indications, will return for the 2017 season. However, obviously that impacts the Blue Jays in ways that we were not able to address during this portion of the podcast. We hope that there's still enough else in here that you can enjoy, and we will address the impact of Tinney's absence to the Blue Jays on a later show. Thanks for coming back to part two of the Inside Lacrosse Fall podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Matt Kinnear and Christian Sweezy. And we are today talking about the Big Ten, the CAA, and the Ivy League. For your listening pleasure as you traverse whatever part of the presumably North American, more specifically Eastern Seaboard that you do, heading home, hopefully back to school, back to work, whatever the case may be, in this fall season. We're really, really excited to be kicking off this end of fall season into the winter stretch, and before you know it, we're all going to be back fighting the cold, getting ready for spring lacrosse action. Fellas, how are we doing today?
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm good too. Thank you.
Well, let's dive right in. Let's talk about the Big Ten. The Big Ten in 2015 made its debut as a men's lacrosse conference, and the week between the end of out of conference play and the you know last five weekends of the season, because the Big Ten structures their schedule so that all their games are on Saturday or Sunday, the last five weekends leading into the final weekend when they have their conference tournament. The conference was 28-24, which, you know, and of those, I believe Maryland was 7-1 and Ohio State was 7-3. Hopkins was 3-5, Penn State was 3-5. At that point in time, I don't think a lot of people would have predicted three Big Ten teams in the NCAA quarterfinals and two on championship weekend. Turning your attention to 2016, how surprised would you be to see three Big Ten teams in the quarterfinals?
How surprised would I be to be?
Yeah, it's a question of degree.
You know, I'd be pretty surprised. I think you're going to see Johns Hopkins and Maryland. I'm not sure about Ohio State right now.
I would say that as well. I like Ohio State. I love their program. I love the way they do things. But I do think that they might have a little bit of a dip this year. At Maryland, I saw them against Bucknell in a scrimmage. Their midfield was incredible. They have so much depth, a lot of athletes at midfield. I think they're going to be a lot more dynamic than they were last year. Tim Rotans is back. He's not playing attack, so they have a little bit more speed, I think, on attack. Although with he and Rambo, I think that might be two lefties, which is what we talked about. Notre Dame can be a little bit of a curveball at times. And the Maryland defense, their system is so good. Those guys, after they beat Navy last year in the regular season, I was talking to a former college All-American, and he said Maryland did not put a foot wrong. As a defense, they all moved together. And, of course, a good goalie, Bernlohr, first-team All-American returning. So I do feel like Maryland's going to be pretty solid. I think they're going to look a little bit better on offense. Their defense will always be good. And I think Johns Hopkins is going to have a great offense. And their defense gets better. You know, they may struggle in February, but by March and April and May, you'd put your money on them to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sticking with Maryland, I mean, you know, at this point last year, we were wondering who their goalie was going to be. And then they ended up having the Honors Award winner. That's a pretty good situation to find yourself in. And this year, you know, Dan Morris didn't lose that job by very much. You know, they have a lot of talent, and it's the type of thing where you expect Bernlohr to get a little bit better because he's getting pushed in practice by a guy who is very good. They graduate Casey Iketa, who, you know, for my money, was one of the best defensemen in the country last season. And, you know, they pick up Greg Danseglio, who has been on campus for a year and presumably will be able to pick up where things left off. You know, and then from there, Isaiah Davis Allen is one of the best short 60 meters in the country. I love the energy that he brings to their practices. It's a bummer to lose Matt Neufeld, a long stick midi who tore his ACL, right? ACL or Achilles?
I believe ACL.
Yeah, in the fall. Really, you know, kind of just a little bit of a gut punch. I loved watching him play and thought that he was relatively unique among long stick medias and college lacrosse heading into this season. So, you know, for fans of that position, it's a little bit of a bummer. But, you know, you mentioned, obviously, Christian, the way in which their offense might be able to take a step forward. How much of that do you attribute to Matt Rambo? When you look at the 2015 All-America list, it's not a stunner. You know, you see the other guys that Ronable mentions. It's not a stunner that he's not on there. But then when you consider the fact that he scored 59 points and helped lead Maryland to the NCAA championship game, you know, the fact that he hasn't gotten an All-America honor yet in his career is a little bit surprising, right?
I'm surprised that when I was talking to John Tillman, I said, who is your best outside shooter? And he said Matt Rambo, which I never would have come up with, but it makes sense. He's a lefty. You know, he shoots. I think he's at his best either coming from behind the cage or coming from a wing. But having said that, I went and watched some clips on YouTube, and there he was against Villanova scoring two extra man goals from 15 yards with nice crank shots lefty. So not that I'm questioning John anyway, but this time he was definitely right and I was wrong. So I'm surprised his numbers are not that far, his being Rambo's, his numbers are not that far off from what Joe Walters would do statistically. You know, I think Walters was a much better kind of overall player, but Rambo does a lot for this team, and you know, kind of a blue-collar team. You kind of like that kid who's going to initiate contact. And especially in the semifinals last year against Johns Hopkins. No, not Final Four. We called it the semifinals. But in the semifinals against Johns Hopkins, you know, he was fearless going to the cage. And I just saw a hunger and a desire from him that maybe I hadn't seen earlier in his career. So he impressed me. And the people around him, I think, are better. I think they're just much more athletic.
They have a lot of depth in their midfield, too. You know, you mentioned guys like Henry West and Brian Cole, and you can start to see where, you know, maybe losing Joe Lacasio is not the it's a similar transition of what it was like to have to replace Mike Janicek. I think it's a fair comparison, and I think that, you know, there are a couple guys on that roster that will be in a position to take up step forward. And I think Pat Young is a right-handed alley dodging midfielder, you know, brings an element that if they had had it, they didn't necessarily want to use it that way the previous 2 years. It made more sense to set up you know, first Chanichuk and then Lacasio on that backside wing, and you saw a lot of step-down righty shots. I don't know if you're necessarily going to see that out of Young, so he's the guy that's going to draw the slide and move the ball. And if they can do that efficiently and effectively, then I think their offense will take a step forward.
The first two times he was on the field against Bucknell, he scored a goal, but it was not alley-dodging. I was expecting him to alley-dodge, and he came back kind of to the middle of the field, got his hands free, and took a really nice righty shot. He scored two goals in that scrimmage. And it's funny, because you mentioned Cole and West, but the two who caught my eye in the fall were Heacock and Young. Heacock was on the second line. They get three goals against Bucknell. Young had two. They were on the line together. They moved really, really well. Cole impressed me because he's so tall and he has great vision. You know, he's the guy in their 3-3 on extra man. He's in the middle of the top three. That's where your money guy goes. That's mm-hmm. where Janicek was before. So he impresses me in sort of being such a good feeder from the midfield, which I feel like is a real lost art these days. So I enjoy watching him play. But I was just so impressed by Maryland. They really popped athletically to me. And Caleb Brody, a redshirt freshman from Hingham, Mass., played a lot in that fall scrimmage and looked good. And then they have a sophomore, Connor Kelly, mm-hmm. from Connecticut, who's a really nice overhand righty shooter, scored a goal on extra man. So I think they have a lot of pieces. Monahan, the freshman from Gonzaga, had two goals against Bucknell, I think both in the first half.
Do you expect him to start?
No, but I think he'll play a lot. And okay. He might start. I think he's better than Carlson. I think he's a different player from Jay Carlson, but I think he has a lot more range on his shot. Carlson was an amazing finisher inside. Chuck Carlson, who graduated, isn't there anymore. And I loved his Carlson's game. He was almost like the MIAA Canadian player because he could shoot so well from in tight. But Monahan, to me, is very two-handed. I think he's kind of shifty without being fast, so I think he gets his hands free that way. And I'm curious to see kind of what role he fills, because he's not athletic, but he's a great shooter, righty-lefty, and he has ways to get his space.
Does the team have a quarterback offensively?
I think it's Rambo.
Okay.
Or they invert. Yeah. I suspect it'd be Rambo.
So that was what was interesting to me, is that I had a perception of Monahan that I think is, you know, you hear comparisons between him and Carlson.
Exactly.
And
a lot of people do.
But I envisioned him always a little bit more as a behind the cage type initiator. I didn't see Gonzaga play nearly as much as you did. And as a result, like, when we went to practice, I saw him doing that a little bit, and he was carrying from X, getting topside, and finishing right-handed, and I was like, okay, I can see that happening, and if you use that to complement with Rambo, but, you know, it kind of sounds like in scrimmages and games, that's going to be less likely or less common occurrence, as opposed to him kind of roaming around the top of the crease.
I think so.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I think is going to be an interesting storyline for the Big Ten this year is the way that the face-off position shakes out. With Christopher May transferring to Ohio State after spending his career at Georgetown and having a great season. Obviously, some known quantities in Charlie Raffa and Joe Nardella. And then Drake Kreinz, you know, holding down a nice position at Penn State. And then Hunter Moreland complimenting Drew Kennedy. This was the best league facing off last year. Four of those guys that I just named have graduated. And I think Hunter Moreland is going to end up being a really nice asset for Johns Hopkins that helps separate them, particularly early. Do you see that being something that puts Hopkins over the top, or how do you kind of see their faceoff play impacting who they are in 2016?
When I talked to Dave Petromala for Faceoff Yearbook, and I asked him about faceoffs, Moreland, and I think Kennedy is still there too. Those are the first two names I was expecting. He threw out Mataris, the kid who got hurt last year. Yep. So look, he was our number one faceoff guy going into the season, but he got hurt at the end of last fall, missed the whole year. He's back now. He's healthy. So they have a lot of depth, and I think in faceoffs it's so important. You saw Johns Hopkins do it last year against Syracuse in the quarterfinals. You know, Moreland and Kennedy took roughly 50-50. Just you're trying to get a hot hand or trying to get someone who can win a matchup if you don't have that one guy like Trevor Baptiste at Denver. So I think Hopkins probably has three guys who can really fill that role where some of these other people may not have any or have not developed it, you know, any proven talent yet.
What do you think Hopkins – how do you think Hopkins will adjust to the graduation of Will Stanwyck?
It's bigger than people think because I think he did – again, almost like Monahan, without being this phenomenal athlete, he could get separation, he could get his hands free, and had an amazing lacrosse IQ. He really impressed me, Stanwyck did. As a freshman, I thought, he's okay. You know, he just got better and better and better. And by the time he was a senior, he looked like a first-team All-American. I accept the point he was not, but that's what he looked like to me. People think, oh, Shaq will just fit in right there for Wells. I don't know if it's that seamless. But to be fair, I think Hopkins has a lot of other options. I think they can alley dodge. I think they can wing dodge with Joel Tinney, who is my pick to be the next big thing in lacrosse, at least this year. I think Joel Tinney's phenomenal. So I think that they may not need a Wells Stanwyck to be there.
Do you think how do you think it impacts Ryan Brown's ability to have an 8-for-8 shooting day?
I was talking to someone who knows, who's forgotten more about lacrosse than I will ever know in 100 years, and he thinks Ryan Brown is the best shooter Hopkins has had ever, or certainly in recent memory. And I said, who was second on that list? He said Brian Wood. But Ryan Brown just does everything. He can finish from 15 yards. He can finish from 5 yards. He can play the two-man game and be the pick. He can be the two-man game and carry. He just does everything, and that's where I think someone like Kyle Wharton, who was kind of in my head as their best outside shooter in recent memory, but he tended to stay on that left wing and, you know, didn't necessarily create his own shot, whereas I'm not sure Brown creates his own shot either, but he's so versatile. He can do righty and lefty things, and rather ominously for opponents, Dave Petromala said that Brown came back in the best shape he's ever been in. He had a summer internship with the Cincinnati Bengals, and apparently he worked out with the Cincinnati Bengals, so I suspect he's going to have a very big year.
Do you think that Johns Hopkins having, well, basically filling in for what was Enright and Kelly and now, you know, Shuler after an injury, you know, ended one of those defensemen season early, there's a drop-off or a separation between Nick Fields and whoever is the second and third starter. Is that their biggest question mark?
Possibly. And again, I think their defense gets better as the season goes on. I really like Ben Keller, the transfer from Bucknell. You know, Patriot League coaches thought he was, at times, the best defenseman in that league when he was at Bucknell. So, you know, so there is a drop-off, but I don't think it'll be as big as people think. I'm also very, very excited to see Coulter. I think his name's Ryan Coulter, mm-hmm. The short, sticky middie from Culver. Everything about him, Ty Zanders raves about how good Coulter was at Culver Academy as a short, sticky middie and just sort of the things he does. And again, Coulter's not, I don't think he played in the fall. He wasn't at the top of their list. When I talked to a coach who saw Hopkins in the fall, which narrows it down considerably to who it might be because there are only two, but he, I asked him who caught your eye. He said Joey Carlini, short, sticky middie, and Derek Ahembo, a long, stick midfielder with the two. You know, again, not names I was expecting. So I think Hopkins, I appreciate that there is a drop-off from Fields and the other guys, but it may not be as big as people think. And by the end of the year, that drop-off might not exist at all.
Well, and that was one of the points that I made when talking about the graduation of Castronova and Pellegrino. You know, two guys who had played so much lacrosse over the course of their careers, two guys who had sustained tremendous, you know, or if not tremendous in Pellegrino's case, certainly nagging injuries throughout the course of their careers, but also were like at the emotional core of their teams. You know, it just kind of seemed like at the end of their, you know, the 2015 season, they weren't necessarily an asset. They weren't necessarily a liability either, but from a speed and athleticism standpoint, you know, you can only, your body can only take so much before, you know, it starts to take a little bit of a step back or at least needs time to heal. And I think that, you know, with Carlini and Kiambo entering this season without the miles that those two guys had on them last year, and certainly a little bit of depth with the transfer in of Austin Spencer from UMass, I think that's another one that could help ameliorate some of the graduation losses that Hopkins sustained.
Spencer's ground ball numbers in particular at UMass were really impressive, and that's something I think Hopkins has missed. I go back even to Matt Bocklet, in the transfer from Fairfield, who was on the title team in 07, who amazing. I think he had 100 ground balls as a junior and again as a senior. And I remember Billy Dwan and Dave Pretchamala saying that in the first practice in the fall, Bocklet was so everywhere. And they said he's intercepted more passes in one practice than any of our guys has intercepted since we got here 11 years ago or whatever it was. So, and I think Spencer adds a little bit of that as well. And we haven't even
another transfer.
Exactly. And Kelton Black, who, you know, played a little bit short 60 midi in the Big Ten either semifinal or title game, scored a goal in transition, you know, and he's, so I mean, they have plenty of players.
Moving on down the rest of the conference, I don't know, Matt, if you have anything to
add.
Yeah,
I mean, if you look at the other end of the spectrum in terms of kind of the preseason favorites, you got to look at Rutgers, and, you know, they're a team that's, you know, there's potential there for them to surprise you. You know, obviously, you talked about face-offs earlier in the graduation of kind of a number of face-off guys in this league and how it looks just different at that position throughout. You know, they graduate Joe Nardella, which is a huge loss for them. You know, he was kind of a game changer in a lot of their big wins in the past few years. But, you know, kind of look at last year's scores. You know, they had a stretch there in late March, April in Big Ten play where their fortunes could have really radically changed. You know, they lost to Johns Hopkins 9-7. They lost to Michigan 10-8. They lost to Maryland 9-8 in a game that I think, if I remember correctly, they were up pretty late in that game as
they
well.
They were. Rambo scored the winner late.
And Rambo scored the winner, which, by the way, completely blew my mind that he was never been an All-American. I did not know that until you just mentioned that. So
I didn't know it either.
That caught me by surprise big time. And then they ended the season with a 17-10 win against Ohio State. They return, I believe, their top three goal scorers. You know, it's a blue-collar team that, you know, a few balls go here or there, you know, their fortunes look a lot different, and they're in that Big Ten tournament.
And what I like about Ohio State, piggybacking on them, they know who they are. Like, they are very, they know exactly what they want on offense. They know what looks they want. They know what looks they don't want. Robbie Hawes is one of the best defensemen in the nation. I think Ohio State's very impressive, and I really like their program, and I like the things they're doing.
We, you know, can't talk about the Big Ten without talking about Michigan. You know, I saw Michigan play a lot early in the season last year, and it, just kind of looking back at those results. So, significant one-sided wins against Bellarmine and Detroit, one-sided loss to Notre Dame, one-sided win over Canisius. They're 3-1. And then I watched their Jacksonville game, and it was one of those games that just got away from them, and I felt like it was something that had a negative impact on their momentum going forward. They ended up losing by 10 goals to Brown. That game, if memory serves, was one of those games. It was one of the games at which we started to notice, oh, wow, Brown is legit. They're for real. And then, you know, so some early season momentum didn't necessarily parlay itself into, you know, kind of that mid-season form that I would have expected. I think that this year, because of the advanced, you know, just the additional year of experience that a lot of their contributors have under their belt, the way I think their composition, offensively in particular, and defensively to a lesser degree, is coming together, I really like what they have, and I think this is a year where 500 is attainable. You know, potentially stealing a second win in the league would be attainable as well. Let's move on to the Colonial Athletic Association, where the Towson Tigers won the automatic qualifier and represented the CAA in the NCAA tournament play-in game in 2015, where they defeated High Point and went on to put a scare into Notre Dame in the NCAA tournament first round.
One thing is, like, you know, just kind of stopping you real quick there, how good was Towson's year last year? And how, you know, it kind of, looking back on it, is just really surprising everything that they accomplished last year. You know, you go back to that midweek win against Johns Hopkins earlier in the season, you know, getting to the NCAA tournament, that game, you know, in the NCAA tournament. Did it surprise anyone else? Just kind of like, did you almost forget about it last year, how good their season was? You know, kind of looking back on in the fall, like, you forgot how good Towson was in 2015.
I think that's true, but I also think it, like, I think they went either 8-7 or 7-8 in 2014, and it was one of those years where I felt like, yeah, I think they went 8-7, and it felt like they weren't that good. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's a binary function of I would imagine that a lot of Towson people will agree with this, like disrespect across the board, and to a degree, I think that's something that the entire league struggles with as well. But I also think that it parlays into, you know, what would be the second narrative throughout the league, which is, you know, these are of the six teams, only Towson and Fairfield finished above 500 last season. You know, tradition rich in Hofstra, Delaware, UMass certainly, and Drexel having made it to the NCAA tournament in 2014. You know, my question is, how good is this league actually? And I don't know if that's an easy question to answer. I think that the starting point is this: is this a conference whose winner is going to be back in the playing game in 2016 is a reasonable place to start. And I think the answer there is, are there four conferences whose champion is going to have a lower RPI? Obviously, difficult to predict without knowing whether or not there's a bid thief that goes on. But in terms of likelihood, what do you expect?
I was impressed with Towson. I saw them, and they actually, air quotes, beat Syracuse in their fall scrimmage 9-5. Tyler White's a great goalie. You know, I was watching the game with an All-American, former All-American goalie, who was very impressed by White. You know, big kid, takes up a lot of the cage, but has really good hands as well. You know, he plays his angles well, but also can get to the higher shots if you're trying to beat him low to high. The offenses share the ball. You know, I think they don't have the one guy who does this and the one guy who does that. You know, they tend to really like to spread those roles out. One time you're going to be the Dodger, the next time you're going to be the second or third guy. But I'm impressed by Fairfield's talent. You know, Neubauer was a really high recruit out of Baltimore. Charlie Schneider, I believe, was an Under Armour All-American.
He was, yeah.
And then went to Ohio State and then transferred to Fairfield. So they certainly have plenty of talent.
You know, graduating then Tristan Sperry, Colin McClendon, you know, you have to wonder if there's going to be some drop-off there, you know, on that team. But, you know, they have Neubauer back. Just like you said, they have a lot of offensive talent. And, you know, I don't see any of the teams in the bottom four in that league. I know we always say how the CAA is kind of any given week, any team can beat any team, a lot of close games, a lot of one-goal games. It's tough, kind of similar to the Patriot League in that aspect of the style of play, but I don't see any of those teams in the bottom four competing with Towson and Fairfield. I think it is a two-team league, and the rest are going to be fighting to get into the third and fourth spot. That's my opinion on that.
You know, I don't really have a whole lot to add. I think that, you know, to your point about Towson in terms of their role delineation, I think it's worth noting that they had 11 guys who scored in double figures last season, which just kind of underscores that. One of the things that stands out to me about Towson is their staff continuity. You know, those are in Anthony Gilardi and
Sean Natalie.
Well, and Kachi. Danny Kachi. You know, these are guys that have had the types of success that would put them in position to move on to bigger jobs. And I think that staff has been in place, you know, the entirety of the 4 years that Sean's taken over as the head coach. And I think that's something to be said for both the continuity of the program as well as the success that they've had there. You know, I think that there are individual talents, whether it's a guy like Cole Schaefer or a guy like Sam Linares, who can steal games. But even, you know, Drexel has a big question mark in who's going to initiate the offense now that Ryan Belka is gone. You know, Hofstra, Chris Selva wasn't the goalie at the end of his career that he was at the beginning of his career, but at the same time, you know, that's a place where they've had a fair amount of stability and continuity that they have a question mark heading into this season. You know, UMass, with a couple of guys that transferred out, as well as, you know, a couple of contributors that graduated, you know, they themselves have a fair amount of question marks. And you know, Delaware, Matt, you're more familiar with them than I am, but, you know, it just doesn't seem like they have the pop offensively to be able to compete, you know, on a consistent week-to-week basis in the league, much less be able to put together a run at the end of the season to move on to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, one guy to watch out for Delaware, though, is Paul Major. He's an attackman who I've kind of seen throughout his career, and every year he's gotten a little bit better. He just goes to the net like no one I've seen and just doesn't care if he gets hurt, just kind of runs full speed ahead. But you're right, you know, the offensive weapons, are they there? And one thing in Fairfield, they were 9-6 last year. Every game that they lost was a one-goal loss. So, I mean, just look at that right there. Easily we're talking about a 13-3 team, and this whole conversation is just a little bit different, and we're talking solely about who can knock off Fairfield in this league.
Well, let's move on to the Ivy League. We will wrap up part two with the Ancient Eight, which is the Ancient Seven in our sport. And I think that there are two ways to attack this. The first is Brown was so surprising and so intriguing last season that we can consider the Bears and then move on from there. And the inverse is, you know, Cornell, who has been the picture of consistency in the Ivy League for more than a decade and a half at this point, they're going to have an unusual amount of question marks heading into 2016. Which is more intriguing to you?
I think Brown. I think Jack Kelly could be a first-team All-American goalie. I love his, obviously, his ability. He was even very good in high school and started as a freshman at Brown. But Lars Tiffany will tell you he is the heartbeat of the team, and he's got a little bit of that, kind of what you want to see from your goalie, like not arrogance, but he's very confident. And I think that he really, for a goalie who sees the type of shots that he sees because of the type of defense that Brown plays, you know, they're kind of all over the place. I think that he really, you know, if he gives up a goal, it's all, I'll get the next one. So I'm very impressed by Kelly. Of course, everyone talks about the Brown offense, but with him, I think their defense is in pretty good hands too. I'm curious about their faceoffs. I think historically their faceoffs have been
sub 40%.
Yes, exactly. Or, you know, certainly sub 50%. Cornell, Cornell is very good in faceoffs. When I saw them in the fall, Massimilian was phenomenal against UNBC. I think they have pretty good faceoff wings. My team that I'm bullish on is Harvard. I think Harvard has two of the best defensemen in the country. I really like Juhelka. Dubniak. Those are two of probably the top six defensemen in the country if they're healthy. And by all accounts, they will be healthy. So with Ben DeLuca now running the defense, you know, of course, he took Cornell to a Final Four as a head coach. I'm very bullish on Harvard.
See, Terry, to get back to your original question about, you know, what is more interesting, Brown or Cornell, it's Cornell for me. It's the exact opposite answer that Christian gave. I saw Cornell in the fall, and I think it's going to be business as usual, you know, kind of the normal rebuild, not reload for Cornell. You know, I think they graduate maybe their top six scorer or something ridiculous like that. But there appear to be no drop-off in my mind. You know, I think John Edmonds is just a great player, whether he plays midfield or attack. You know, he's kind of taken that leadership role as a senior. Jordan Dowiak is a guy who you don't really hear his name a ton, but, you know, he's a great midfielder, can shoot the ball, really penetrate on midfield. I don't think there's going to be as big a drop-off as people say there's going to be for Cornell. But I'll kind of hedge my bets here and say this is a very good league, and I think Yale is the team to beat. So there's really no room for error anyway in the Ivy League. But, you know, I don't think Cornell is going to be by any means a team that's, you know, near the bottom of the barrel there in the Ivy League. I think they're going to be right in the mix to make that league tournament. Getting back to Yale, you know, who I saw as well against Delaware and Georgetown. You know, they were thin on numbers in the fall, but it seemed like every play there was a new guy who was contributing. They have a lot of guys in midfield who just, you know, they all kind of look the same and play the same, but they all do it very well. And they've been a model of consistency in the same way that you would say Cornell has been. Ben Reeves is just an animal. He's a workhorse. When I saw them in the fall, like I said, they were really thin on numbers. They had some guys out with the flu. You know, they have a guy playing football. He played pretty much the entire day in a pair of scrimmages, and was just as good at the end of the day as he was at the beginning of the day. He was quarterbacking the offense. You know, there's really a lot to be said to having that guy who's kind of a steadying presence, who can really eat up minutes for you and have no drop-off against some tough defenses.
I'm always impressed by how many athletic middies Yale has. Mm-hmm. You know, Alessi, you mentioned, was playing football. I mean, even when they played Maryland in the NCAA tournament last year, I thought they were more athletic than Maryland, which you wouldn't always say an Ivy League team is better than a team that had spent its life in the ACC and is now in the Big Ten. I do think Michael Quinn, the defenseman from Yale, is probably also in that top six defenseman in the country. Mm-hmm. I know the Yale coaches love him. They think he's amazing. Sessa is a freshman. I think they really like, very quick. Yeah. You know, can get his hands free and can get defenses moving. I think it's a wonderful league. I do think Cornell could be really good this year and yet be sub 500 in league play.
Interesting.
Aside from that, you know, to me, I think that there are some, so couple of things that at this time of year, I always get really excited about the prospect of freshmen. And I think that, you know, in Yale and Penn both brought in recruiting classes that we evaluated as being much better than typical for both of them, you know, top five classes for each. And I think that as a result, really excited to see some of those freshmen. You mentioned Sessa from Yale. Dana Jellis is another one that stands out in my mind, you know, just to kind of hear people talk about it. A lot of big two-way middies in this group, three, maybe four guys who can get on the field and make contributions at either end. You know, Penn, they're a handful of guys. I mean, they've got, you know, one of the more interesting guys in somebody that made the cover of the magazine as a faceoff specialist, but it's actually an attackman in Tyler Dunn. And I think that Penn is going to need a few reinforcements. I think Nick Doctor is among the best distributors, the best playmakers in all of college lacrosse, and I think that's a good place for them to build around. But, you know, the one team that we haven't mentioned that much yet or at all is Princeton.
I was about to.
Yeah, who, you know, I think, I don't know what to make. I mean, obviously, the, you know, not having either Ficarro, when you could have reasonably expected to have at least one. The departure of another defensive coordinator as Dylan Sheridan takes over at Cleveland State, an upstart program that'll begin play in 2017. There's a lot of talent. You know, I think if you're a fan of two-way middies, I don't know if you like anybody in the country more than Zach Currier, who plays a lot of offense, takes a lot of face-offs, and plays a lot of defense. But at the same time, you know, whether it's McDonald, Orban graduated as well, right? They're I love their defensive personnel. You know, Reynolds, who we've got in Ventry, Strabo, Goldstein. You know, I think that they're big, mean, and physical defensively. But, I wonder if Princeton's going to be able to score 11 goals against a good defense.
One of my buddies who is a Princeton alum, and like, unfortunately I keep saying this, he knows way more about lacrosse than I do, but he says, look, I asked him what he thinks this year. He says, look, they can score goals on anybody. Bates' offense, a Paris offense, they can score goals. That's not a problem. And Jerry Price, CSID, who notes that they have more returning starters than anyone in the history of the sport on defense because they have all three guys back from last year and they added two more who missed the year with injury. It's interesting. Again, goalie and faceoffs for them, mm-hmm. I think, are the thing. And it took them a while, I think, to find a place for Currier. I thought he was maybe a faceoff wing earlier in the year, and then he wound up being the guy in the Ivy League tournament who was just everywhere causing loose balls. And I've never seen a guy do all the stuff he was doing in that tournament. So, you know, they might be the team who comes in, who sneaks in and takes the whole thing. I'm worried about their offensive personnel. I like Ambler, the other guys. I think they're okay. But my buddy says, look, this offense is – they're so efficient, high shooting percentages, and they can score goals on anybody. They've done it against great defenses and not so great defenses. So, be interesting.
Well, I think that's an interesting place to leave it as the final word. We will come back tomorrow with the last four conferences in Division I lacrosse. We appreciate you listening, and we will check you out again soon.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.